Welcome to Becker's Payer Issues Virtual Forum. My name is Morgan Hafner, and I'm an editor with Becker's Hospital Review, and will be your moderator for today's session on top concerns for payers in 2020. 2020 is not the year that payers anticipated, with the pandemic changing what's a priority and establishing a new normal that health plan members have to navigate. I'm so excited to discuss how priorities and strategies have changed with Cece Connolly, who is the president and CEO of the Alliance of Community Health Plans, Michael Carson, who is the president and CEO of Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare, and John Kao, CEO of Alignment Healthcare. I'm going to turn the floor over to each of you to further introduce yourselves and talk about the work you do for your organizations. So Cece, I'll start with you, and then John, and then Michael can follow.
Morgan, thank you so much, and it's great to be back with the Becker's folks and audience. And just to give a little bit of context to ACHP, the Alliance of Community Health Plans, we are, as the name suggests, an association based here in Washington, D.C., representing nonprofit, provider-aligned community health plans. And the membership is important because it is also the model in healthcare that our members live by, believe in, and that we wish to advance. We feel that the evidence is compelling that when you have a health plan working very closely with the providers in their community, grounded locally, that's when you see better health for individuals, for the community, and much greater value for your healthcare dollar. And hopefully with my board member, Michael Carson, joining us here today, maybe you're gonna hear a little bit of echo chamber from us on some of those themes, but that's what we're all about here at ACHP.
Thank you, Cece. My name's John Kao, the founder and CEO of Alignment Healthcare. We're a Medicare Advantage health plan. We serve about 75,000 seniors in 17 markets in two states. We have been in existence for about 6 years or so. And our values, is interesting listening to Cece, I think are actually similar in that the values of the company are number one, put the senior first. Always put the senior first in everything we do. Number two is support the doctor. Number three is use data and technology to revolutionize hair care. And fourth, have a serving heart. And so all of those values we embody and live every single day. And we have built a platform designed to identify different levels of acuity and then have built care protocols to care for people, particularly that 20% of the chronic frail that cost 80% was spent. So nice to be here.
Hello, everybody. Thanks, Morgan, for the quick introduction there. And yes, Cece, great to see you. John, great to see you. I have much respect for both your organizations. Harvard Pilgrim serves just around 1.2 million members across New England, so in Massachusetts, Maine, New Hampshire, Connecticut. Fully insured, self-insured, some Medicare Advantage business as well. But we also have subsidiary organizations that serve self-insured ASO, TPA members across the country through Population Health Services as well as direct TPA services. So another 2 million or so in that regard. But our primary focus from an insurance perspective is in New England. 50 years ago, we were founded out of Harvard Medical School, so our roots are on the provider side, and that certainly has spanned and influenced our DNA still today, although we're not part of an integrated system, as some people still believe. There's often much confusion about that, but that ended some time ago before my time at Harvard Pilgrim. Nonetheless, the focus on the payer-provider collaboration and integration remains extremely high. So we're looking to make a difference in the lives of the members and the communities we serve, and as a non-for-profit insurance entity, we do so every single day.
Perfect. Definitely a broad range of payer perspectives here today, so thank you all for joining. I wanted to kick off our discussion with the top two or three concerns each of you or the health plans that you represent are facing right now. Definitely different from when we first kicked off 2020. So Michael, I'll hand that question to you first.
Thanks, Morgan. So, you know, usually when I get the question, what keeps me up all night, at night, I usually say nothing because I sleep pretty well. But clearly there are priorities and things that concern us. If we think about outside of COVID-19 for a second, there's a lot going on in healthcare, whether it's the fragmentation of our healthcare system, rising medical costs, rising pharmacy costs, which, you know, until COVID-19, we would talk about nothing else but rising pharmacy costs, it seems. Those are still there, by the way, in case anybody thought those went away. That's still an issue. Even pre-COVID-19, community and social epidemics in terms of behavioral health access, vaping, opioid crisis, all those things are a priority and a concern to us because we're looking out for the health and well-being of our communities. Increased consumerism clearly has been a focus of ours. It's ever-changing. We need to keep up. Insurance companies, for those who haven't paid attention from a net promoter score standpoint, were next to last on industries just above the cable companies. So we're slightly seen as favorable to cable companies, but everybody else is better than us. So we need to do something different there. And then not the least of the concerns are on the political and regulatory front, significant instability. Is ACA funded? Do we get CSR payments? What's the next election mean to our offerings? Are there various variations in terms of plans that can be offered? So those are threats to us. National, as a not-for-profit, regional not-for-profit, national competitor expansion continues to be a concern of ours. And I'm giving you more than two, but this is sort of the litany of things. Provider consolidation clearly is big on the list. And some of those are exacerbated by the pandemic. So I know we'll get into that conversation, but they're all on our radar, and some may have drifted into the background, but are equally as important still today. And then others have really been rushed to the forefront for us to address.
And Cece, I'll direct that question to you next. What are your top two or three or more concerns that you're addressing right now?
Well, Michael certainly did provide a very comprehensive look at the landscape, and I would echo those. I think maybe another way of articulating it is uncertainty. And of course, health plans are in the business of forecasting and managing risk. And so when you have layer upon layer of uncertainty, it gets very difficult from a business perspective. So even though you may hear conversations so far through this pandemic that it's been okay for a number of payers because maybe claims are down, and that is correct in a number of instances, but there are so many unknowns ahead. And it's probably a number of months, it could be up to 18 months of these unknowns with respect to the pandemic, with respect to the legislative and regulatory environment, with a very major election looming, and also a country that remains so politically divided. Michael mentioned briefly unmet social needs, and in fact, and if we get to this, clearly, the pandemic has shown a bright, harsh spotlight on inequities in our country, including with respect to health, health disparities, unmet social needs. And the evidence is very clear that the connection between things such as housing, food, transportation have a very direct impact on your health and your community's health. So thinking about that, so I describe it as a big giant umbrella of uncertainty. We don't know when subsequent waves of COVID may be hitting, where those are going to be, how serious those cases are going to be, will there become treatments available or vaccines available, when might that be, what might those costs? I know I'm posing a lot more questions than giving answers, but I want to provide a little bit of a window into the types of issues that health plans are grappling with, and certainly from a nonprofit community-based health plan perspective, you know, in a typical year, I would say most of our members are running at maybe 2% margins, and everything else is getting pumped back into the community and services, and Harvard Pilgrim can give you some really terrific specific examples of that. But when you run on that slender of a margin, you just don't have a lot of extra room and dollars for crises of the magnitude that we're now facing.
Those unmet social needs and inequities, I think, is one of the biggest, you know, priorities that have been exacerbated by the pandemic. And John, I want to give you the option to weigh in here too. Your top concerns right now, and maybe even how the pandemic has changed what you are prioritizing.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with Michael and Cece on a lot, on it, pretty much everything. You know, I think for me, the summary is consumer engagement. And, you know, so what does consumer engagement mean? And so when the pandemic hit for us, very practically, we had to essentially take all of our clinical organization, the doctors and the nurses, because we do deliver the care at the home. We had to combine that with our concierge organization, which is kind of the member service part of the company. And we had to figure out, how do we educate the large percentage of the membership base? You know, because remember, this is 4 months ago in February, March, no one knew what was going on. Shelter from home was just a foreign concept. I mean, you know, So what we did was we had these virtual town halls. We had 10 of these virtual town halls, and you know, we served 75,000 people. We had 58,000 people actually join the town hall, which was shocking to me. We had, you know, a bunch of these different things, and we used it as a forum for education. And what we found is it was very empowering for the senior. And that we kind of had this deal where you hit one for yes. We asked them a bunch of polling questions. You hit one for yes, two for no. And we ask them these questions, and we get feedback, and then we'd take action. And so we would take action to address the specific issues that are related to social determinants. Okay, great. You want me to, you know, shelter from home. How do I eat? How do I get food? Right? And so we amassed volunteers, we amassed provider partners, we amassed brokers. We delivered, you know, 30,000 meals to people just to get food out to them. Another concern was just face masks. You know, how do you get face masks? We couldn't get face masks. You know, so we delivered 40,000 face masks. I mean, so I think engaging the consumer in a way that builds trust. And to Michael's exact point, the whole thesis of Alignment was, how do we engage them, the members, in a way where, you know, our net promoter score now for 2.5 years is 65. And I think the average is about 36. And the members that we touch are is 77. So engaging the consumer in a way that allows you to provide, and this is why we're such fans of Medicare Advantage, just a higher value proposition, higher quality, lower cost. And so what I think about is, how do I maintain that and sustain that as we grow the business? And that gets into data architecture issues. It gets into care delivery, partnership relationships, transparency of information, empowering the provider to take care of the member more, those kinds of things. But regulatory change and being quick to adapt and flexible to the regular changes with respect to stars and Medicare Advantage, you know, risk adjustment, you know, as this Michael mentioned, you know, telephonic reimbursement, you know, all of that is an unknown right now. It's all in the air.
So many unknowns.
You know, and the pharmacy that just came out, right? I mean, it's like the rebates. I mean, there's so much of this. And so I think the ability to be nimble and adapt to these changes quickly and operationalize them is something that concerns me.
Mm. The example you shared about holding that town hall, I think, is a good one that illustrates how health plans can rise to meet these new priorities. And I want to open the floor up to Michael and Cece as well, as you are seeing these problems that have always been around, but maybe they've grown bigger during the pandemic. How are your health plans, either that you represent or that you lead, addressing these changes? And I'll direct that question first to Michael.
Thanks, Morgan. You know, of all the things I rattled off in terms of challenges, clearly the financial uncertainty is a big one. Cece alluded to sort of our margins, and you know, a not-for-profit regional health plan or local health plan, it's not uncommon to be running a sub 2% margin. So your ups and downs, the fluctuations, the cyclical nature of our industry causes some trouble there, especially when there's so much uncertainty. So one of the things, and we're talking macro and micro solutions here, of course, but on a macro level, I've had to get the organization, get the board, get the leadership team to embrace that we're really talking about a 24-month financial period, because 2020 is sort of, who knows, there's claims that haven't been incurred for 2020. So you see some uptick there, but COVID-19 expenses going up, perhaps various regulatory assessments happening. We've done a $32 million premium rebate announcement recently. We've done another $40+ million in provider payment enhancements. We've given another close to $10 million to community assets to help get food to at-risk patients, like John was talking about, as well as to community health centers who maybe aren't equipped to be able to administer telehealth to their patients. So making sure that underserved areas and clinics to address health disparity, as well as address potentially underfunding of those elements. So there's lots of money that's not being paid, but then being paid out in another way. Then you have COVID-19, multiple waves coming that we have to anticipate in the coming months and spilling into 2021. Likely rate pressure that we'll receive based on 2020 claims expense, likely provider contracting, hospitals contracting pressure that we'll experience based on expense rates that they're going through. So there's just a lot of uncertainties, which means that we look at a 24-month period from a financial management perspective instead of 12, and we take calculated risks. So tremendous amount of effort going on around doing actuarial analysis in-house, as well as relying on national trends and bigger insights, making periodic investment decisions like the ones that I just referred to. So we've done the first couple of rounds of that. We'll need to let 3-4 months pass to see how things evolve and then make further decisions from there. You can't do it all at once, but you can't just also stick your head in the sand and not do anything. So sort of a periodic approach to that is critical. That's sort of on the macro financial management level. And then, you know, we pride ourselves on being a community-based organization, community-focused organization. So it's not just about cutting that big check to the United Way. It's about how do we roll up our sleeves, identify local either provider organizations or community-based organizations that are serving our communities where we most need it, and then participating in those as appropriately. In many ways, trying to be an aggregator of these various assets. I'm sure the world John lives in, you're constantly evaluating, how do I take that Medicare patient and not just rely on the doc or the nurse that I can send to their home, but how are they connected to their community? What are other community assets that I can bring to the forefront? So as a payer, we have to take on that accountability that we're not just a passenger on this ride. We actually have to be a driver and help aggregate and align some of those resources.
Yeah, absolutely. And the partnerships is a really interesting discussion that I want to get into, because I think this has forced a lot of different, whether they be with community organizations or disruptors or providers, the partnerships that have come out of this are really interesting. So we will touch on that next. And I just want to give Cece an opportunity to weigh in here if you want to, about the way that your health plans are rising to meet some of these new priorities.
Sure. And I think Michael captured well so many of them. I would just mention, you know, I love John's town hall concept, and I think we need to steal it because it's terrific. We saw many of our plans use some pretty sophisticated risk stratification to identify their most vulnerable members during this pandemic in particular, and then did very creative and aggressive outreach, telephone, email, text message, whatever it took to reach those individuals. Think about someone with maybe multiple chronic conditions, perhaps unmet social needs. And so it was everything from making certain that they were getting and taking medications to if they needed some sort of a visit, first trying to see if it could be a televisit, which we've touched on telehealth here today. That's obviously one of the bright spots of this awful pandemic. And I think that one of the advantage that so many of our ACHP members had was that they had already headed down the path of telehealth. And so they started with this good foundation and they were really able to supercharge the telehealth offerings. At the same time, Morgan, that they were waiving all sorts of fees, co-payments, deductibles. Many of our plans, as Michael mentioned, have provided premium discounts, rebates, grace periods, also real financial support to those provider partners. This comes back to the model that I opened with, because we see that collaboration and partnership is so vital. We had many of our community health plans actually getting resources, dollars, and other support to their provider partners through this crisis. So those are just a couple of the things that we've seen.
I want to dive, like I said, a little bit more into those partnerships and look at if there's any new ones, and it doesn't have to be specific to your organization, but any new relationships with payers or providers, employers, disruptors, what have you, that have caught your eye recently. And like I said, they can be internal or ones that you've just seen that are interesting to the field. And so, John, I'll ask you first if you've seen any interesting partnerships.
Yeah, I mean, so 6 years ago when we started, every health system, I think, was going to be an ACO, get into value-based care, take risk and all this stuff. And I think you fast forward 6 years and really, I think many of the organizations in CC's world are really the kind of the models of what can work. But I would say the remaining 90% haven't worked. I mean, it's just harder to do than people have thought. And so I think one of the things we've done with an organization that's, speaks for itself is an organization called Sutter Health in Northern California. And we did a kind of a partnership with them, which was a co-branded Medicare Advantage product. And it was Alignment Health Plan Sutter Health. And it was all about care delivery. It was all about getting fee-for-service, patients that were in their umbrella organization into a Medicare Advantage organization, because there's just better outcomes all the way around for everybody. So I think value-based care models that are going to include more virtual care components within that care delivery supply chain, you're going to see a lot of those popping up, financially, I think that getting into value-based care now and prepayment is, I think you're going to see more and more organizations do that and take it seriously this time. Not that they didn't the first time, but they kind of had the foot on the dock and the boat thing going on, which I think was very real. I think they're going to have to bite the bullet this time, just because it scared them. And a lot of the big delivery systems, have been challenged.
I see both Michael and Cece nodding their heads, like, yes, value-based partnerships. Do either of you want to expand on some of that you're seeing?
Yes. Well, I happen to agree with John, and that's a hopeful agreement, because I'm also a realist sitting here in Washington after several decades, and I know that there are going to be powerful forces in the industry and in Washington that are already arrayed in support of continuing our misaligned, perverse incentives in fee for service. But hopefully, any thoughtful person that reflects on the experience of the last few months can see that fee-for-service has not served our nation well. We saw all of these physician group practices that have been dangling by a thread because they only maybe had a couple weeks of cash available. And what I can tell you is that for the provider entities that were already in an integrated system or had these strong partnerships that we've been talking about, they were able to focus on delivering care, often via telemedicine, rather than trying to chase volume. And it's just, it's a different activity. You know, if you're a doctor and you go to medical school, you want to take care of people. You don't want to chase volume. But unfortunately, that's the system that we have too much of in the United States. So I hope that people are seeing and observing what we are. We get some indications, Morgan, that we are hearing more of those conversations taking place. I also think there's an important role for policymakers to keep that momentum going. So we sure think it's very, very important, and I'm crossing my fingers and toes, John.
Yeah, if I can add to that. So huge supporter of value-based care. Obviously, you've spent many years on the provider side and the payer side driving value-based care strategies across the country. Could probably do another hour just on value-based care. Reality is that we have a lot of work to do. And as much as I would love to flip the switch and get us there, there's a lot of trust to be built between the payer and provider communities. We have to address the fact that one size doesn't fit all. There are many independent physician practices out there that really struggled during the pandemic, that aren't big enough to take on risk on their own and are at risk of either going out of business or being absorbed by a larger group, or worse, sorry for audience members who are on the system, hospital system side, worse, being absorbed by the system entity. So those all provide challenges because we need the appropriate balance in the healthcare system. So we need to be creative in how we drive the value-based care agenda. Telehealth, I think, is a great example of that. You know, CC and I are involved in many, many, many conversations from a lobbying and a policymaker perspective about telehealth payment parity kind of conversations. And at the end of the day, it's like if we're paying a cap, a fee for a value-based payment, then it wouldn't matter. You know, John gets contracted, you know, we pay you a certain amount a month and we reconcile it, you get some surplus money or you have to pay us some money back, but you get the resources you need, hopefully, to take care of the patient, take care of the member. And that's really the way it should be. And then we're not arguing about what a telehealth visit costs versus an in-person visit costs. If we do go there, by the way, I wonder if we could do something like Medicare did on readmissions, where we say if there's an office visit within X number of days after telehealth visits for the same diagnosis, maybe we don't pay the office visits, but I know that can be controversial as well. Just a crazy idea there. So I think we need to be creative about how we pursue value-based care, but this clearly is another moment in time, perhaps hopefully tipping point, where we can drive that agenda a little bit further. If I can just spend a minute on sort of broader partnership, clearly the provider hospital system partnerships have been key. One of the things that we try to do very early on, aside from figuring out how to get cash flow support to our provider partners, is also to say, what do you need support in? So you're seeing a certain number of patients. At the very beginning, it was, how do we clear hospital beds and make room in the ER for COVID-19 patients coming in? So we collaborated in identifying, as Cece said, the most at-risk members or patients, depending on who you are, and try to do outreach to them to make sure that the ERs weren't flooded with folks that didn't really need to be there, just like we always do, but put an extra effort behind that to accommodate and account for COVID-19 volume. And then in terms of making beds available for potential COVID-19 patients, relaxing prior authorization requirements for transfers out to subacute levels of care was also a very important administrative burden relief that we executed on very early on in coordination with those partners. So in some ways, partnerships are there. We just needed to execute on those. Some of those execution things are temporary because there is a reason why some of those things are in place, but at least for the moment, I feel like we were able to partner with organizations and provider groups significantly there. The one other one I bring up, kind of what I said before, from a community organization perspective, this really goes to the whole person care and social determinants of health concept, as well as health disparity focus. We really do need to think of health as much broader than insurance and the doctor's office in the hospital. There's so much more to healthcare. And I think partnerships have evolved, at least within our organization, and I know in some of our partner organizations, where we've used this to bring these organizations together, help our communities, help our members, help our provider partners out in a different way than we have before. And I think that's been another great partnership piece that's come out of it.
Yeah, I really liked your point about creativity and how it's going to take some of that to ensure these changes that we're seeing are not, in terms of value-based care, you know, as temporary as they are, thinking more long-term. So, terrific. That's all the questions I had for each of you, but I want to give you one more moment to share any final thoughts before we sign off today. So, John, I'm going to hand the floor over to you, and then Michael and Cece, just a 30-second little wrap-up would be great.
Yeah, thanks, Morgan. Yeah, I'll just close by saying, in my section, just saying, it's a privilege to be on with Michael and Cece. I mean, and the commonality we have is this kind of servant leadership attitude. And I really love that. You know, we talk about it either in the context of community service, care delivery, the consumerization, you know, of what the plans can evolve really into, much beyond just health insurance, but more holistic care. I think the plans, if done right and build the trust both with the providers and the members, and just reestablish you know, those net promoter scores, if you will. And the way to do it is just do the right thing. Take care of people. And we have a simple saying, is like, just treat the senior like if they're your mom or your dad. How would you want your mom or your dad to be treated? Just treat them that way. And we kind of did that, and, you know, kind of in the context of STARS. As you know, instead of STARS being an administrator, what if the entire company just thought that way? And so with these folks, I really admire what you're doing, because that's, I think, what's going to solve healthcare.
Michael or Cece, any final thoughts to share?
Sure. I'll just say, so much about the last several months and this pandemic has been awful and distressing and painful for so many, and we're certainly not out of the woods yet. But I do hope that this is one of those moments in our history in the health sector and in the policymaking world where we really use this as a wake-up call to get serious about our health priorities here in the nation. And as we've discussed today, it's not, you know, insurance is not health, even medical care and volume. That's not health and well-being. And we need to really get the conversation, the industry effort, the policymaking back on the health of individuals and communities. And we can see so much of that roadmap in front of us. And I hope we all really pull together and make some of these important changes.
So I would say crisis challenges are great opportunities to stand up and be leaders and do what we're here to do to begin with. One of the core values that we have at Harvard Program is accountability, and we hold each other accountable for our jobs, our outputs, and how we serve our members and communities, and it's no different than this case. So we have to take this as an organization, as individual leaders, and the opportunity to collaborate with Cece and the other health plans that are part of the organization is one of the ways that we're accountable to each other as well as to our communities. I know John's organization relatively well. We used to compete against John in many ways. So I know that they're doing great work there as well. It's, you know, I have a saying within our organization where I want to make it our goal, our vision, our aspiration to transform how healthcare is accessed, to aggregate the disparate healthcare system that we have, and then to guide members through what's really a complex and, you know, messy system in many ways. So if you think about that, it's transform, aggregate, and guide, so TAG, so tag, we're it. And that's sort of an accountability thing, and that's where I come back to, what better opportunity than this crisis for us to step up and show what we really do for the system and for our country? And I know that the members here, as well as several other organizations within the system, do that as well.
With some excellent takeaways, quotes, and taglines. Thank you all so much for talking with me today. And I want to thank our audience as well for joining us and making time to be a part of our Payer Issues Summit virtual forum. So please make sure to check out other amazing sessions that Becker's has coming up in the next few months. And also let us know if you have any questions or comments or feedback. And thanks once again, and we look forward to having you at future Becker's events.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Morgan.
Thanks, Morgan.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.